What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
Yo, what's up, kids? Thank you so much for supporting the show. Thank you very much. The Tumblr throwbacks, really appreciate that. But there's more ways you could support us and help us out. Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, leave a review. The more reviews we get, the better we get as a crew. More listeners means more fun, means more stuff to do, right? Simple as that. Go to rantemradio.com, go to shiningwizardsnetwork.com, and go to turnbucklethrowbacks.com and get all of our other content, back content, other shows that we support. It's all there. Go get it. It's all for you. You want to buy a t-shirt? Please buy a t-shirt. It supports us. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbucklethrowbacks and get one of four designs. You won't be disappointed. They're pretty fresh to death. More importantly, thank you so much for supporting Turnbuckle Throwbacks. We appreciate it. We love you all. Peace out.
I am the baddest dude that walks the streets today.
I'm gonna end your career once and for all, right here in Madison Square Garden.
I knew that I just had to go down and give her the thrill of a lifetime, the rude awakening.
The last thing I want to do is to own the damn WWF, because that's got to be the biggest headache in the world.
Get used to it. Who you looking at, the man? Woo!
It's time to crank your headphones and forget your problems. You're listening to an action-packed episode of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast.
Woo! Yeah!
Yo, monkeys, it's me, DDP, the king of Bada Bing, the master, the diamond cutter, the three-time world champion and WWE Hall of Famer. And you, monkeys, well, you're listening to Rhea and Choppy on Turnbuckle Throwbacks. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Bang!
Yeah, man.
Yo.
What's up, party people? Welcome to another exciting episode of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As we lower the radio.
That's a good song. Who is this?
That's Hatebreed doing a Madball cover of Set It Off.
And where's this band from?
Hatebreed's from Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've mentioned Hatebreed to you before.
I
played with them back in like 97. Oh, look at that. The same year fucking we're doing a throwback tonight. Shout out to Jamie and Hatebreed. Well, welcome to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, live on the Rant EM Radio, Rant Entertainment Media, part of the Shining Wizards Network. As always, your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Philip G. Rea, and I am joined back in studio.
I'm thinking. Choppy is in the house.
It never gets old.
Dig it.
Anyway, Choppy's punch drunk. So, we're just in pre-production talking about how tired we are because we have to work for a living. Mm. Anyway, all right, so we got a loaded show for you tonight.
Oof, do we ever.
Yeah, we got Mega Powers calling in a couple of minutes. He's got some news regarding our social media content, and we're going to talk some New Japan.
My brother from another mother.
Yeah, well, your brother, yeah, from another mother. Fuck that guy. No, I'm joking. Yeah, Dave, I spoke to Dave this morning.
Oh, hey, hello Shaylin and hello Maverick.
Oh, Maverick and Shaylin.
Yes.
Heyo.
Heyo.
Where is my fucking soundboard?
There, I don't know.
There it is. Oh, there it is, hold on.
Hello, gorgeous.
All right. Anyway, all right, so, like, you were out last week.
Yep, because wifey was sick.
Right, so wifey was sick. We did not do the throwback we were supposed to do, so we're skipping it. Who cares, because this is the more important episode
this
anyway.
This is the best.
And. Yeah, so anyway, so so we have just a lot of stuff going on, you know, behind the scenes. We're planning a lot of shows for you guys in the next couple of weeks. We're not going to be on next Friday. We'll be on next Saturday. We're doing the War
Really?
We're doing the War Games next week.
Oh, that's right.
It's the War Games.
The War Games.
The War Games, if you will, motherfucker.
Ring that fucking bell.
Ring that bell, if you will. Woo! We're going to be live on the rant. I think it's 8 o'clock. I forgot. Double A is supposed to... Double A, if you're listening, please let me know if it's 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. But me and Choppy will be on. So you're getting Turnbuckle Throwback / NXT TakeOver.
Oh my god, I'm so excited for that fucking show.
/ War Games Retrospective Roundtable. So you're getting a fucking potpourri of wrestling.
Guess who's in the house right now?
Who's in the house?
Mandingo.
Oh.
Mr. Rob Domingo, the Mandingo's in the house.
Alright. Thumbstick Ninja's in the building. So, anyway, yeah, so we're doing that next week. Then the week after that, we're doing, I think, World War III from
WCW. That's a good fucking pay-per-view.
And that's going to put us right into December. Thanksgiving break and then December. I'm thinking since we're going to be away for Thanksgiving, you and I together, I'm thinking I may take the laptop and one of the microphones and do some shit, yeah, while the girls are away doing their thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have... Maybe we'll fuck around and do something.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So, good times. Good times indeed. Good times. So, we got a lot of stuff lined up for you. Mega Powers is calling in a couple of minutes. And shout out to Chris Espo. He just sent me a text message. He's playing 2K18. With the Omega versus the Alpha.
Oh, man.
And we're going to get into that as soon as Gabe calls. I have the clip all queued up. I have a ton of clips for you guys tonight. This is a long time coming, man. And there's mixed emotions about tonight's throwback because people are on both sides of the fence about who was right, who was wrong. The way the industry changed after that, apparently. The smart mark generation began around that time. Choppy's making a face like, who gives a fuck? But it's apparently when you put this stuff out there on social media, and it's been like this all week, that everybody's just been abuzz about it, you know? And it started on Tuesday with the rant guys were talking about it.
Can you believe it's been 20 fucking years and people are still talking about this fucking event?
Dude, I mean, I don't know, but... So, I was we're going to get into it in a little while. Your week has been hectic, my week has been hectic. I do want to share a funny story, though. So,
please.
So, today, oh, boy. I'm not very good with wardrobe. Like, you know me, I'm a t-shirt and fucking jeans kind of guy. I got a couple of suits when I have to do, like, the funeral thing or the wedding thing or whatever, right?
But I'm not very good with updating my wardrobe. I'll throw out t-shirts after like 7 years, and that's about it. I'll switch underwear every couple of years, and that's about it.
Oh, so you use the same underwear all year round?
I wear the same pair once a week. But like, I had to order like 12 pairs of underwear this week because I've been wearing the same fucking set of underwear for like the fucking last 7 years. And Tony's like, what's wrong with you? You're an idiot. So now I have your son's baptism this Sunday. I have another thing and we're doing a family photo tomorrow.
Really?
We're doing a family portrait.
Christmas photo?
Well, she wants to use it for Christmas, but we haven't had one. We never took one. She goes, you need like a shirt or something. I'm like, oh boy.
I still have your photo from last year where you guys were at Disney.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was dope.
So I said, how come we can't use any of our summer photos? She goes, we didn't go away, asshole. I was like, yeah, you're right. That's all right. So I had to make a trip to the Big and Tall today.
How'd that go?
Because So now, listen. I ordered shirts online, but they're not going to get here in time.
Okay.
So she's like, well, you know, just, you don't have to, I was going to get a pair of jeans and a couple of shirts, you know? Now, what you guys don't know, if you're not fat, is that fat people clothes are expensive.
It's a lot of fabric.
Like, if you pay $25 for a pair of jeans, I'm paying, like, $50 for a pair of jeans. And if you're paying $100 for designer jeans, I'm paying $150 for designer jeans. I don't wear designer jeans. My jeans are fucking very cheap, and I go through them like water. That's one thing I replace every year is jeans. And, like, you know, so I had to go to the Big and Tall store today. Right? The casual male, right? Why is my fucking... Where is this thing? Hold on. Uh-oh. What's going on?
My mic. Oh, there we go. Okay. Much better.
This thing is fucked. I have to replace this thing, by the way.
Gotcha.
So, I had to go to the Big and Tall store today. Now, I don't live close to anything anymore. Choppy knows this. Everything for me is a fucking car ride or a 20-minute walk.
Well, the Big and Tall is not that far from you.
Son, it's 2 miles away. It's...
You can walk that.
I'm not walking. There was 35 degrees out today. what is this, Little House in the Prairie? Right.
No, it's Lancaster, PA. What are you talking about?
All right, half pint. Go fucking churn some butter. So anyway, I take the bus to the Big and Tall, and I walk in. There's a nice lady. Her name is Natalie. I can't forget her name because it's my sister's name, you know? So Natalie says, "How can I help you?" I'm like, "Well, no, I'm just browsing." So now she wants to help me. Like, what are you browsing for? I'm like, "Well, I need some, you know, I need this, I'm doing this, I'm doing that." She goes, "Well, let me help you." All right, I'm the only one in the store at this point. Let her fucking help me, right? I know what I want, but I'm just let her help me. So she's picking out shit, you know. So she hands me four pairs of jeans, two different sizes, because again, with fat people. It depends on the cut of the jeans. Is you know, like I can fluctuate between 2 and 4 inches. Just depends on the cut, you know. Yeah. Same thing with shirts. I can wear a size smaller. It just depends on the cut of the shirt. So, you know, so I'm in there. I'm trying shit on. I'm sending pictures to Tony Ann. Like, yeah, look, I'm wearing this. She hands me a fucking $80 like a polo sweater. You know, there's no way I'm paying $80 for a fucking sweater. I'd rather pay $8 for a baseball jersey. You know. Or football jersey. I'm not paying $8 for a fucking sweater. You're out of your fucking skull. But it was nice. You know, it was form-fitting, you know?
What, was it a V-neck?
No, it wasn't, actually. There were V-neck fucking sweaters, though, that were there that would, you know... Again, I'm not... Like, these cardigan sweaters, I'm not paying a shit ton of money for them, though. I can tell you that. So, anyway, I'm monitoring my son's chat on the PlayStation Network. So that's what my phone's.
What pedophile's after him now?
No. Don't talk like that about Rob. He only talks to like three people: Rob, his uncle, and my boy Chris. He calls him Uncle Chris. So
gotcha.
So he talks to like two, three people there. So anyway, so I go to Big and Tall and I'm trying shit on and I'm just like, I'm not very good with this shit, you know? I know I want, like, a fall-looking, like, a flannel-looking shirt, but I don't want to look like a fucking fat lumberjack either. You know what I'm saying? So...
Looks like fucking Paul Bunyan.
Exactly. So I say to this lady, I don't want to look... So now she goes, let me let my friend help you. Oh, here comes fucking Fruity McFruderson. He comes walking over, let me help you. I'm like, oh, hello!
Frisco!
Hello! So I got Frisco helping me, And he's like, so Natalie tells me you don't want to look like a lumberjack, right? And I'm like, you're right, sir. I don't want to look like a lumberjack. You could laugh. It's funny. He was a nice guy, though, you know? But he was fucking on fire. Fuego, right? So he was like, well, just, you know, why don't you try this on? I'm like, I already did. You know, oh, what about this? I'm like, yeah, all right, that's cool. And he's, like, in the fucking polo section. I'm not paying $175 for something I'm going to wear twice.
Oof.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not in it. If I'm going to pay $175, it better be, it better have my name and number on the back of it. And it better be fucking from the pro shop at fucking Citi Field, you know? I'm not, that's not, I'm not wired like that. I have to wear it a lot for me to pay money for it. Like, when I pay $300 for a fucking baseball jersey, I'm wearing it 10, 12, 15 times a year, you know? So I'm doing all, I'm there for like an hour. So now Tony Ann calls me while I'm in there. She's like, don't buy jeans, just wear whatever you have. I'm like, all right, so, and just buy shirts. I'm like, okay, that makes it better now, because I don't have to, these pants go with this shirt and this fucking faded, like, I can't understand how people pay for faded jeans and jeans with, like, holes in them and shit like that. I could do that myself. I could beat my pants against a rock outside and cut them with a fucking razor blade and make this. And look, I have $200 jeans. You wouldn't even know it. It's remarkable how much people pay for clothes. And this is not just fat people clothes either. Like, you know.
You go to the trendy Abercrombie and Fitch stores and you see them jeans that are all ripped up and you're just like, why am I going to pay $80 for a pair of jeans that are already ripped up? There's no extra fabric on it.
First of all, I'm 300 pounds. Why would I want to add more attention to myself by putting holes in my jeans and fucking fading my pants, dude? It's not. It's just I'm not wired like that, man. And I clean up well.
You've been to my wedding. You clean up very well.
I bought that getup just for your wedding.
I had to upgrade
the gear anyway, but it was just a, you know, hold
he
on.
Was, oh, hey.
Oh, he's calling in already. This motherfucker don't play. What's up, David Mega Powers?
Mega Powers.
Yo, what's going on, guys?
What's up, you handsome bastard? What's going on?
You know, it's Friday night. Feeling all right. This is how we woo it.
That's right. That's how we woo. Do. Woo! Let's get into
woo!
That. Let's, woo. Let's get into that. Did you see the documentary or no?
Yeah, I actually watched it this afternoon. Well, first of all, good news. I got a fucking new job. And
congratulations, my friend.
Yeah, boy.
Look at like
the first day that I started, they're like, yeah, we observe like all federal holidays, so you're off this Friday. I'm like, what? Okay.
Thank you to all our veterans, by the way.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you for your service.
Yep.
So I checked it out this afternoon. It was pretty good, but I thought that they were going to go into some of the deeper, darker, like flair stuff, but they didn't. They just kind of like grazed upon it, but I thought like the stuff about like Ric Flair was pretty good because I don't know, like we know the man has been styling and profiling all these years, and like, you know, I definitely knew that he was definitely, you know, drinking and partying because, you know, even before this documentary, there was like, you know, plenty of different sources like saying how, you know, even, you know, after the fact that he was retired, he's still taking people out, still, you know, taking the tab for everyone in the friggin' restaurant. And if you listen to his podcast, like he was pretty wasted on some of them.
And he was, Choppy didn't see it, but he didn't dig deep into a lot of the dark, crazy stuff, but he did elaborate on it enough to give you
an idea.
Yeah. If you didn't know him like we know him as a performer, then you would get an idea of how his career went, you know?
Yeah, and I thought the documentary, you know, was well done, like in a way that if you have no idea who the hell Ric Flair is, you definitely will know.
Right.
And if you're a fan who knows like the ins and outs, like you'll still be satisfied watching that 30 for 30.
Yeah, so like it was very insightful and it was very well done, produced by ESPN, and I thought Flair was brutally honest. Everything they asked him, he didn't give a lot of thought to it. Like, he obviously he knew what they were going to ask him prior to it, but I don't think he was prepared to answer some of the questions, like when he got into Reed and he got into Charlotte and he got into his lifestyle and stuff like that. I think when the reality hit him, when they were actually recording it, you saw a different side of him.
Was he getting?
Yeah, because he's always been one to brag about his conquests and his party lifestyle, but there was never really previous interviews where he like took accountability for the toll it took like on his family. So I thought that was like a nice twist to the documentary that he was still Slick Rick in the documentary, but he was much more reflective than we've ever seen him before. So
like at least he wasn't reserved. Like at least he was brutally honest. Like I appreciated the brutal honesty of it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
That's what I about.
How emotional was he when he was talking about Reed?
He got very emotional.
He did.
Yeah, he didn't.
Now wait a second. Ric Flair cries about almost everything. So.
Right. So this is not a far stretch for him now. But
yeah, he could like be at like a Chuck E. Cheese and playing with the grip, trying to get like the stuffed bear, and gets the friggin' bear, and like he'll start crying after that.
But the Nature Boy came correct, and it's something I'm downloading it as we speak. So when I get it, I'll give Choppy a copy of it. But it was very well done.
So it lived up to the hype.
It did live up to the hype. It was. It could have gone 2 hours. I thought
so much to cover about him.
I thought they rushed the last 40 minutes of it. That's just me though. Me being anal retentive about certain things.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah, that could have been like a 10-part miniseries and still wouldn't cover everything.
Let me ask you guys something. In comparison to the Scott Hall one, which one was better?
Oh, the Flair one.
The Flair one was better.
Yeah, both were good. I haven't seen the Scott Hall one in forever, but they're both are really like on point.
All right, Mega Powers, so we got that out of the way. Now, you were going to call in last week. You had some news for us, and then we're going to pick your brain because you are the content expert on New Japan Pro Wrestling in a circle of the crew. But you do have some news regarding our social media content, so why don't you enlighten our audience who's listening live on the rant?
Yes, just want to put it out there. We're now officially on Instagram. It's at Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Yes, sir.
Because I enjoyed doing the Facebook so much, I was like, let's go to Instagram. Because plus, like a lot of the stuff that I was doing on the Facebook stuff is like very, Instagram kind of content. So it's like let's spread the love on Instagram. Plus, I think we could probably get like more exposure on there too. And like within the first week, we got like almost 100 followers. And in less than a week, I had like a few people like hit me up. Like there's like one Bruiser Brody, him like doing his own patented protein shake with the raw eggs and all that other kind of stuff. And I was like, yeah, this would be pretty pretty cool to throw up on there. And I got like a few guys asking me where I got the content. So before I even answered, one of the dudes was, I looked at his account. He was like a producer from Vice. So I was like, huh, wonder what's going on with this. And then the other message was from the fucking director of Hobo with a Shotgun, Jason Eisner, which that's one of my favorite movies. I was like, oh, shit. Like, why are these guys, hit me up about where I got my Bruiser Brody video? So I messaged him back, just started chatting him up. Apparently, I don't know if it's going to be on Vice or what, but apparently these guys are working on a Bruiser Brody documentary.
Ooh. That's cool. So we'll get them on the show, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yes, I will. I already confirmed from them. They're down for doing the show.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Awesome. So they're going to be doing a Bruiser Brody documentary, and they wanted to get that footage of him in his kitchen making breakfast. For the documentary, and they were like, oh, do you know where we can find like better quality version of this? And I of course did so I hit him up. So I guess since we have Ric Flair 30 for 30, I don't know if it's gonna be Vice or what, but there's going to be a Bruiser Brody documentary coming down the road from Jason Eisner. And I apologize, forgot the other guy's name. I believe his name is Evan. Forgot the last name. And actually, I was like, while I was chatting him up, I was like, oh, you should talk to, you know, Everson Murray. We had him on the podcast, and like, we already did. So I was like, perfect. Now I know your documentary is going to be good. So.
Yeah, so that's going to be fun, and we had a really good time at Emerson Murray. If you guys ever get a chance to go back and listen to that, that was a really good episode.
That was a good episode. I remember that one.
So, and Dave and I did our homework for that. Like, we got the book, and we pressed him with all the good questions, and he appreciated all the work that we did, and we were on just, like, some two schmucks asking him questions about Bruiser Brody. We did our homework because we cared about the character and the story and all the quotes from all the different people that were in the book. It was a good read, and Emerson did his due diligence. But now this thing with Vice, and I like Vice too. Vice is Action Bronson, one of my favorite rappers from Queens. He's he has a cooking thing on there called Fuck That's Delicious, and it's, that's what awesome. What he does is while he's on tour, he goes to all these exotic places like in Europe and all these continents. He was on Australia, Asia. And he just eats all this exotic food and gets fucked up with his friends and get wasted. It's a great show, though. It's a good and he's also a trained chef, so professional chef. So Vice is they're on the cusp of bringing out good content. They have some good programming on there. So this is gonna come correct if they do their homework like Dave thinks they're gonna do, and they get all the footage and the right people to talk about Bruiser Brody. It's gonna be a masterpiece, I think.
Yeah, because I think with, like, Brody, you know, he's a wrestler that, like, any, you know, true wrestling fan, you know, can appreciate, whether, you know, regardless of what kind of style that they like in wrestling. And but I feel, you know, he's also one of those, you know, characters who's kind of, you know, misunderstood. And, you know, there's still a lot of mystery surrounding that death. And, you know... As we found in Emerson Murray's book, everyone's got like a different, you know, point of view on Brody. So,
right.
So I'm kind of interested to see what these guys are, you know, got in the oven and see how that's going to turn out.
Yeah, because after all these years after his death, it's been 25 years since he's dead. I mean, you know, more than that. We died 88, so it's almost 30 years. You know, people still talk about him. Like when you hear certain people that were there on other podcasts, you know, guys like Dutch Mantel and Flair spoke about him, and there's a bunch of people that speak about him. I mean, JBL talks him up all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, so, I mean, it's going to be, if it's anything like the book, it's going to be nothing short of amazing, I think. So, I'm hoping we get to get involved in that, so.
And plus, you know, since I see, you know, since I, you know, I'm behind the scenes, I could tell that these guys are, you know, they're always checking in to see what posts I'm putting up there. So I could tell at least, you know, these guys aren't, you know, just trying to get footage and move on. So they're following the page, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So so these guys are, you know, these guys are awesome. I met Jason Eisner a couple times in the past when Hobo with a Shotgun came out. He's super cool guy. So I'm really. Really interested to see how you know what his take on a Bruiser Brody documentary is going to look like.
So everybody go to Instagram, follow us at Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Dave is the main player on that. We get involved once in a while with that. Of course, we're on all the other social media outlets as well, Twitter and Facebook and all of the nonsense. But Instagram is where it's at right now. It's the hot topic button, yep. Hot button topics.
Yeah.
So
Facebook and Instagram, so, you know, follow these pages. I'm only putting up, like, funny, like, cool shit on there. There's no, you know, there's nothing there that's going to stir any arguments or get any, you know, flame wars, if people even still use that term anymore.
I don't know.
But, you know, it's just fun shit, you know, stuff that people can appreciate the sport of professional wrestling with.
The sport, that is professional wrestling.
Yeah.
That's what we, damn right. That's what we preach here. That's what we practice as a podcast, as a group. All right, now... While we have you on the line, I got to pick your brain. New Japan just had Power Struggle. We're all set for Wrestle Kingdom now in January. You will be in Japan for Wrestle Kingdom.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yep, I'll be there.
You'll be there.
Actually, and the job approved that time off. I already bought the ticket way before I even had the job. But like before they even, like when they were throwing the offer at me, I was like, I need these dates off.
Dave's getting a laundry list of swag. He has to, we'll give him, he has to bring back.
Yes,
him.
I'll give you money, dude. Yeah, of course.
I want a couple of programs. We want some
gear, dude.
We want some swag.
I'll see what I can do. I know for merchandise, especially for stuff like for Wrestle Kingdom, if I remember correctly, they allow you to go online once, and you can only buy one of, you know, each item. Like if you want to buy like five shirts or five programs, like you have to buy one, and then you have to go back at the end of the line. Gotcha. And buy it again.
We'll cover that base when we get there. But Power Struggle is in the books. It was a phenomenal card. I tried staying up for it. I couldn't. I fell asleep on it. I tried. But I did wake up the next day and watch the rest of it. Before we get into the obvious, what everybody's talking about, what did you think of the card overall? And now are we truly set for Wrestle Kingdom now?
Well, a good chunk of the matches have already been announced, so we're definitely set for Wrestle Kingdom 12. I thought the pay-per-view overall was pretty good. It wasn't, you know, they definitely had better. I don't remember part of it, even though I watched it, so. But, you know, obviously the big shocker, you know, was the announcement of the particular match.
Yeah.
So let's if you'll entertain us for a second, I want to play the actual clip. I have Power Struggle all keyed up. So if you'll hang out with us for a second, I'll play the clip.
Go for it.
He says anyone? Anyone?
Ma, ya pari. Inai wa. Dakara mo goodbye to you shika nai. Everybody, Osaka fans, people around the world, I must bid you adieu. And so, goodbye. Mwah! And good night. Bang!
That was great. What? What is this? Is this? Been a lot of talk about Switchblade.
My God!
What the hell?
That's Chris Jericho!
Chris Jericho!
It's Chris Jericho!
What is this?
Kenny Omega, what a dynamic performer. What a fantastic, tremendous performer. But he's not the best in the world. I am. So many have claimed to be the best, from Shawn Michaels to Edge to CM Punk, but they're all gone, and I'm still here. Because I am the best in the world. I am the greatest of all time. I am the alpha of this business. And I'm going to prove it. Because I'm challenging you, Kenny.
What?
Jericho versus Kenny.
What?
Alpha versus Omega. To see who is really the best. I want to meet you. January 4th.
What?
Wrestle Kingdom 12 in the Tokyo Dome.
That can't even happen, can it?
So let's see who's really the best. Bitch.
Oh my God.
What is,
did I
what
just see
happened?
What I think I saw?
What just happened?
That was Chris Jericho, and he's just challenged Kenny Omega for Wrestle Kingdom.
And Omega looks happy about it.
What's he gonna say?
Jericho versus Omega.
面白いな。 やってやるぜ。
No.
He accepts.
No. No.
He accepts.
There you have it.
It's official.
The Alpha versus the Omega.
Dave, Chris Jericho against Kenny Omega.
Your thoughts
at Wrestle Kingdom 12.
Your thoughts, Mega Powers?
I'm pretty excited. When you know, I realized that you know, there wasn't going to be an Okada Omega 4. It's like, well, what are they going to do with this guy? You know, at the same time, I don't feel like it's a good idea to, you know, rush, you know, Omega into like the, you know, as a champion over there. Because how long has he been in the company for? Like maybe about like 2 years. So he's like rapidly, you know, excelled, you know, through the ranks of New Japan. So it's kind of like, you know, there's going to be a point where, you know, what else is there for this guy to do? So I'm glad that they're kind of like taking a little detour before they even, you know, bring him into a, like another title shot picture. So the fact that Jericho is coming into this, and, you know, we all figured out, you know, beforehand that there's probably going to be some sort of a Chris Jericho, Kenny Omega match, maybe like on his cruise, like a year from now. But I wasn't expecting it to be at Wrestle Kingdom 12.
No,
and I think that's a smart move on Jericho's part because, hey, Jericho, you know, he wants to be in the limelight. He's still got a lot to offer, and Wrestle Kingdom 12 is the perfect stage for that.
So it's two Canadians fighting for the U.S. title in Japan.
So I was just going to ask, is the title on the line?
I think, Dave, is the title is being defended, correct? Or no? I don't
know. They haven't mentioned the title being on the line, so I don't know if it's going to officially be like a title match.
Okay.
Because, you know, with Jericho, you know, he's a big fan of like the one shot, so it's kind of like if there's no like larger plan for him to be there, and if he's like going to be touring with Fozzy and something like that, you know, he's probably not going to be there for too long. But I can imagine he would want to just be there for that one match.
A couple other notable matches. I know the Junior Tag Team Championship. The Bucks are going for that again. I know Jay White, who's now Switchblade, is going for the IC title. How do you feel about Jay White getting that big rocket launch and push now?
I think it's appropriate because a lot of the young lions that have been coming through right now are actually like pretty good. So, you know, he did his excursion over in ROH and, you know, along with the Tempura boys, which they're now Roppongi 3K. So,
yeah.
You know, they did well over there. So, you know, I'm not, I can't say that I'm too surprised because these guys were doing pretty well. You know, when they were just like sporting the black trunks as the young lions. Actually, for Jay White, I remember when he first came on the scene. Like he had an awesome match with singles match with Alex Shelley on like just kind of like a house show. You know, sometimes New Japan World they'll just, you know, post up like you know, road to whatever, you know, and it's like a handheld you know, shot event. And I remember there was one match that he had with Alex Shelley, and it was like amazing, and I was like, this guy's already got it. Why is he still a young lion?
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised he's you know, being put up against Tanahashi for the IC belt.
Yeah, it's going to be a great card, and we're jealous that you're going to be there, but we'll be with you in spirit, of
course.
God
bless you, by the way. I hope you have fun.
Oh, I'm going to have fun. That goes without saying.
You better go to Ribera, too, for me and get some steak.
Oh, Ribera. Give me a jacket.
I've been there. I'll go back.
Yeah, go back.
But the Mandingo will be there too.
Wait, Rob's going too?
Is that why? Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh shit, yeah. I didn't know that. Oh,
I'm going to be there for like almost a month. I think he's going to be there for like a week or so.
Jeez,
going to Japan for a month?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, dude, that's awesome.
That's crazy.
Well, from the last job, I like saved up like a ton of money, and you know, once I was done with that place was so fucking like toxic. It really took like the soul out of me. So I was like, well, I don't know what the hell's gonna bring me back to life. And then I was like, let me go back to Japan, and things changed after that.
You better be rocking our gear over there. I better see some pictures. I want some TC pictures.
You better believe it.
All right. Anything else before we let you go?
No, that's it for right now. I'm interested on hearing your thoughts on the Montreal screw job.
Yeah, so
you all know, I feel, in a sea of professional wrestlers, Bret Hart is an unprofessional wrestler, and Bret screwed Bret.
You just answered my next question. Okay, so Bret's good. Okay, that's good. That's what I was going to end it off with you like that. All right, so Bret screwed Bret. All right, well, dude, I really appreciate you helping us out with the social media stuff.
It's my pleasure.
In your debt. And thank you very much for your insight tonight on New Japan. We were waiting for you to come on. I was waiting for Choppy to get back in the studio so we can rock that with you. So thank you very much for that.
Yes, I'm looking forward to joining you guys for Survivor Series.
Oh, yeah, wife.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, we got some smoked turkey, some deep-fried turkey, and there's a bunch of birthday cake for the wife. It's gonna be.
And Marquise is going to bring his $80 cheesecake.
No, I told Marquise this morning that it's not necessary to spend $80 for a fucking cheesecake that he may not be able to have delivered. And I wasn't going down to downtown Brooklyn to get a fucking cheesecake. So
I wonder who's.
That motherfucker was asking like if I could drive him.
Yeah,
to Junior's to pick it up. Right, I'm like, dude, why? Why am I going to go from Jersey to pick your ass up
to drive to
Brooklyn and then drive into Staten Island?
Right.
And, of course, he's going to want to ride back. So.
Yeah, no, it's not worth it. I told him, I appreciate the gesture, man. It's really a thoughtful gesture on his part. I know he doesn't have a lot of money, so.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary. We're going to have birthday cake for the wife, and we're going to have some snacks, and we always have a good time. The crew, we haven't had a full crew this year yet because of all the moving and stuff going around. But me being in the hospital and then me moving, wifey in the hospital, Choppy having the baby. It's been like a fucking, roller coaster of stuff going on this year. So I'm glad we can get everybody together finally for a little shindig before the year's end. So
sweet.
So we'll see you next week then.
Definitely.
All right, Mega Powers.
All right, brother.
Have a good night.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
You as well. Thank you.
All right.
Peace.
That's Mega Powers right there. Thank God for him. Going to fucking Japan.
Fucking, and Rob's going to Japan?
God bless you guys. I can't believe you guys are going to Japan.
We are very jealous.
We are jealous, dude.
And you better be rocking the gear, and I better get a fucking program.
Dude, if you guys go to Ribera, I'm going to give you money, give me a jacket from Ribera.
They don't give people jackets. Only the wrestlers get jackets.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Bro, you don't think I would have had a Ribera jacket already? I would love a Ribera jacket.
Oh, my God. I want a Ribera jacket so bad. You know what? I want some New Japan gear. Then, if that's the case.
I just want a program.
Fuck the program. I want some New Japan gear.
No, New Japan has a distributor in the States. You can get it.
Does he really?
Yeah.
The Pro Wrestling Tees you're talking about?
They're definitely. You're better off getting it from them because you're going to pay a lot, you know. But no, I mean, they can get a few over there, but I'm just saying, like, but they have New Japan.
I would think it would be cheaper if you got it in Japan itself, wouldn't it be?
No.
Same shit?
No, same shit. No, you know, but
so same shit, different toilet.
Basically, they have better toilets in Japan.
They do. So. You have to actually squat.
Yeah. So our brothers, the Takeover Club brothers, are going to be in the fucking Land of the Rising Sun
and throwing up that too sweet sign.
Throwing up that too sweet for us, and we're going to be international now, son.
God damn, we're international.
International.
We're like the United Nations of fucking.
Hell yeah, we are. We got a bunch of countries repping this club, man.
We got fucking Italians, Portuguese, Filipinos.
Filipinos, Omega Powers. We have a Marquif.
Yeah, we do have a Marquif, don't we?
We got a Nick German. We got a.
No, let's not talk about German. Me and him are having a little bit of beef on the Facebook page.
Oh, you guys are off the chain, man. All right, so anyway, being back to Big and Tall.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry.
So I wound up getting two shirts, one for tomorrow and one for your party on Sunday, right? And then I got myself a fucking Nick shirt.
Are they selling there?
Yeah, they sell sports gear there.
I didn't know
but,
that.
But just local teams.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They have Yankees, Mets, Rangers, Jets, Giants, and they have the Knicks.
Oh, cool.
So I bought a fresh Nick shirt. I haven't had a Knicks shirt in 20 years.
I heard they're doing really well.
They're doing pretty good.
They won six straight, I think.
They were on a winning streak. Yeah, they lost the one or two on the way though.
That's okay.
But they're a young team. They're gonna be all right. So I had like a coupon. Check this out. I had a coupon. If you spend $100, you get $30 off. So I basically got the fucking Knicks shirt for free.
That's cool.
In essence, but I had to buy the gear. So either way. people were big and tall, were like, you know, between Fruity McFruderson and Little Natalie, they were... They,
Fruity McFruderson?
I forgot his name. I'm going to call him Fruity McFruderson.
Sorry, that's great.
So, yes.
Frisco.
Yes, Frisco. This is where we need your wife going, Frisco!
Oh, man.
But anyway, yeah, so that was my experience at the Big and Tall today. Let's get into some wrestling news real quick.
Yeah,
And then we'll go take a break.
What do you call it? I have some news from just saw today.
What'd you get?
They're testing out a new stable in NXT.
A what?
A new faction.
Of who?
You want to hear the members?
Yeah, go ahead.
Buddy Murphy from Blake and Murphy.
Yeah.
Fabian Archer.
Okay, that's the guy who beat Gargano, right?
Yes.
Okay.
This German guy from WXW.
Oh, yeah?
And a supposed leader of the group.
Uh-oh.
Do I dare tell you?
You might as well.
A one Christopher Dijak.
Yeah. that's our boy.
Yeah, right, Donovan Dijak, leader of this new faction they're testing out right now.
That's awesome.
Also, another thing from WWE, the Bludgeon Brothers, they might have dropped the gimmick already.
Yeah, I'm not too happy with that.
I am.
I know you weren't feeling it.
They should have just let them be who they are, dude.
Yeah, but it's remnants of that of the Wyatt family, which makes no sense, dude. Listen, once in a while you got to get repackaged. You have to, especially if you're that size and you're that stature.
They're so talented, though.
They're
very talented.
You had to repackage them. Maybe not that gimmick, but you had to repackage them. You can't give them Wyatt clothes.
I wouldn't say Wyatt clothes, but definitely not.
But that's what they were wearing.
Now they're wearing the Wyatt clothes. But I'm saying
Luke Harper's had a wife beater on for the past 2 years,
and pretty much the same dirty one as well.
Yeah, with the holes in it, and he has Bray Wyatt's pants on. You know, it's ridiculous. But I see where you're coming from. I like the gimmick, though. I was having a
debate online. I think that I would like to see these guys go to New Japan. If the WWE ever releases them, I would love to see them go to New Japan and dominate that tag team division.
I don't want to send 9,000 gaijin to Japan. I think if you can go there and do it, then fine.
Well, think about this. What if New Japan lets go of War Machine? War Machine goes to NXT, and then you pick up fucking...
Yeah, but what if the... Harper and Rowan get into it with the Usos, or they get into it with the New Day. Like you might see that.
You might.
So let's give them a shot before we're shipping them off to Japan. You know what I'm saying? I think it's.
But you know, you see the track record with
right,
Big
but
Men.
New Japan is the new flavor. I get it. Let's not dilute the flavor with 100,000 gaijin going over to New Japan thinking it's going to be okay. Because a different caliber. First of all, guys like Michael Elgin, guys like War Machine.
Which I think Michael Elgin and War Machine should go to fucking WWE. Those guys are fantastic.
That's the thing, though. Guys go there, get seasoned, and then come back to the States. Rowan Harper don't need seasoning. They're ready to go. They're already in the sauce. You know what I'm saying? If you want to use that kind of...
Analogy,
yeah. Like, you know, it's that kind of party with them, you know? Let's stick with SmackDown.
Yes.
And SmackDown was overseas in England last week, and so was Raw. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of title changes. The main title change was AJ beating Jinder Mahal, which nobody saw coming.
I was shocked.
No one saw it coming. And after I just spent the whole diatribe online telling all our fans that I thought that Jinder was going to hold the belt till India, 2 days later, you know, AJ wins the belt. Now, there's a lot of theories going around that... Jinder wasn't up the snub. Jinder wasn't holding his weight. Jinder wasn't having good matches.
He really wasn't.
Like, but how many matches did he have, though? Like, he only had a couple. It was him, Randy Orton, and Nakamura. The Nakamura stuff, you have to X out because Nakamura's not being Nakamura. Okay, him and Randy Orton, I thought were fantastic. I'm sorry, and you can debate me. Our fans can debate me. I thought they put on a good match. I don't know. He's not over the top amazing. We discussed that too. Like he's not, but he wasn't terrible in the ring. I see where the marketing thing came in. They obviously don't care about that. Maybe they wanted to just. I thought maybe he would drop the belt, and then win it right back before he goes to India for the tour, and then whatever. But. No one wanted to see. Apparently, nobody wanted to see Jinder Mahal fight Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series.
Now we got a dream matchup. Now,
See, there's a thing, another thing too. Both former New Japan champions, IWGP champions. I have mixed emotions. You calling it a dream match? I don't see it. I'm not doing fantasy warfare on Turnbuckle Throwbacks. AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar.
But you want to know something? I can see. You know. None of these guys are going to go over. You know what's going to happen? It's probably going to be like a double count or a double disqualification because they don't want to see both titles look like shit on the main show.
And first of all, I don't see Brock Lesnar losing at all until Mania. So why put AJ Styles in that predicament? Like why even put the belt on him and then have him 2 weeks later fight Brock Lesnar at a main pay-per-view just to have him lose in a schmoz or have him lose straight outright?
But you want...
Why?
Because the pay-per-view's not selling, dude. It doesn't look like a great card. I'm sorry. It doesn't.
Raw versus... I'm sorry. The whole... The brand versus brand will sell. And then having enough matches to, you know, champion versus champion... It on paper maybe it doesn't look like what people want to see, but they're gonna have good matches. You know, it's not gonna be bad matches. Except I don't see the allure with AJ Styles and Brock Lesnar. I don't see it.
Is it because the size differential or just
that the style? Like and again, I don't see Brock losing unless Brock was gonna lose. And AJ upsets him?
I don't see AJ losing, and I don't see Brock losing.
Right, so why bother? Like, what the fuck is the... I don't understand.
It's just to sell more
It has to be. Dude, it has to be. It has to be that, because I don't see anything else remotely interesting in AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar, except that they're both talented. AJ Styles is probably the best wrestler next to Kenny Omega and Okada on the planet right now.
I think I agree with you on that.
Okay?
Absolutely.
So, you're putting that against... The Beast Incarnate, who, again, is a part-time Beast Incarnate who shouldn't be losing to anybody except Roman Reigns at next year's WrestleMania. And that's the bottom line.
Now, my thing is this. I'm going to ask you a question. Now that AJ has the title, do you see him holding it until WrestleMania?
I don't know. Because they did this. It's like it's a shock value. Like, you know, WWE is doing shock value things now. They're doing title changes at house shows again. They're doing this again. Like, they want to shake it up. Like you said, they want to sell subscriptions. I don't know where they're going to put him next now.
I could see Nakamura winning the Royal Rumble, ending him and AJ going at it at WrestleMania. That's a moneymaker match.
It'll be a good match. It'll be a rematch from Japan.
It is. It's a moneymaker.
It'll put asses in the seats regardless. WrestleMania puts asses in the seats regardless. So
and,
it doesn't matter, you know.
And no one can dispute this, but AJ Styles busted his ass on SmackDown. The man became WWE champion twice, became United States champion, I believe, twice. The man is a legit wrestling machine. He's the best.
Correct.
One of the best in WWE. Sorry.
Correct. How are we looking in the chat room right now?
We had Rob's in there, Maverick's in there, Pastor's in there.
Pastor's in there?
Yes, he is.
Oh, boy.
Jesus!
We also have Shaylin, of course.
Yeah.
Hello, gorgeous.
And we have two anonymous users.
And everybody
well.
Else is just listening on the TuneIn.
Yes.
So.
But, another bit of news. This time it's not WWE related. It's actually regarding a referee. Mr. Earl Hebner has left Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, they're apparently they're moving to Canada.
Their base of operations will be moving to Canada now.
They totally split from Global Force.
Do you want to know why, though, they're moving to Canada?
Money.
And also Scott D'Amore is booking it now.
Good.
I like Scott.
I like Scott D'Amore. I just don't want them... Before we get into it, I got Bound for Glory. I watched it. I didn't buy it.
Was it good?
No. And I wanted it to be good. Like, you know, Del Rio's promo was fucking abysmal. The Abyss Grotto thing was terrible.
Mind you, this is the WrestleMania.
That's their WrestleMania.
Of the Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, dude. And
that's crazy.
It was supposed to be good. People had high hopes for it, but it was...
And they sold out, apparently. They sold out the arena.
Yeah, it was in Ottawa. Shout out to Stickman, by the way. That's his neck of the woods. But yeah, man, like it was abysmal and I didn't want it to be. I was disappointed. Like I was pissed off. But Del Rio totally, he just like went out there and cut this obnoxious promo. If you get a chance, dude, I don't want to play because it's too long.
I heard that it was very negative towards the company.
Terribly negative. He was focusing on himself. He took shots at the E. Again,
why? For what?
Exactly. It was absolutely abysmal, dude. It was absolutely abysmal.
And then you wonder why I don't watch TNA anymore. I can't. I just can't watch it, dude.
I was home. It was Sunday night. Everybody was doing their thing. I was like, you know what? I was in the other. They were messing around in the living room. I was like, you know what? I sat in a bed. I took that link that Nick German sends us for the pay per views, and it was a good, really good stream. And I watched it, and I was like, this is their WrestleMania. Like, yeah. It was bad, man. And I wanted it to be good. Like, you know me, man. My glass is always half full when it comes to pro wrestling.
But it hasn't been good in a long time.
No, it hasn't been. They had spots. Like, our boys were there. Kevin Matthews, Falaba, Bokura. Like, they were doing things. They were doing Eli Drake. I like those. EC3.
The talent is there.
Yeah.
It's the management is not there, though. It reminds me of, like, 1990, maybe 1991 NWA, where the management was just not there, but the talent was there. And if TNA doesn't start doing some movement, like, start doing some major moves, they're done, dude. They're almost done. And I consider, and right now, Ring of Honor is the number two company in the United States. And now TNA is like a distant three. I'm sorry. Ring of Honor has done some really good business decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Really quick before we take a break here. Owens and Zayn were sent home.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Apparently they weren't too good on behavior in the back.
Well, not even not also that. Apparently, they kind of screwed up on the ending of the match between Cole.
Yeah, they were supposed to go back and they didn't. Like, they were supposed to finish the job and it looked just. And the wrestlers were like, if you look close, they were like in the ring, like, why are you leaving?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. You know, confused.
New Day was like, what the fuck, you know? So
it was just a little mistake.
I don't like Sami Zayn as a heel either. I think it's just
I don't think Sami Zayn likes himself as a heel either because it's not working.
Right. I agree.
Because I've said, even Joey Numbers has said this. Sami Zayn could potentially be your Daniel Bryan of the company because he's such a good babyface. He's a terrible heel.
That makes sense. No, Joey Numbers normally makes sense anyway.
He's a terrible heel. He's your babyface. He's the guy that could be your guy of the SmackDown brand. You've turned him heel for what?
Right.
I mean, I would have turned I think you should have turned Kevin Owens babyface because he did everything as a heel.
Yeah.
For such a long period of time.
And he's the best heel in the company.
He is. Yeah. He is the best heel in the company.
He's the best heel in the company.
But I still think there would be more money in maybe Owens being a babyface than Sami Zayn as a heel. I mean, come on. It doesn't make any sense. But whatever.
All right. Well, listen, before we go to break, I have some breaking news. Well, it's not really breaking news.
Okay.
Breaking news, we are getting some new shows coming to Rant and Radio. More importantly, the Midnight Jury, our boys from Philly, are coming in 2018. I had a long conversation with Mike Norenganger last night on a telephono, and Mike is really excited. Him, Adam, Cal, Sydney, the old, they got their equipment. They worked out the contract with AA yesterday, and they're going to do one live show a month on a Saturday night for the Rant and exclusive content. They're still going to have WLW Studios. Their talent's going to be – I mean, their show's going to be on there exclusively, but they're going to have – we're going to have a – and on Christmas Day, I think AA is going to stream a bunch of their stuff on the Rant.
Okay.
So Midnight Jury coming to the Rant, rejoining us in the Shining Wizards is like a little bit of a reunion of sorts. So that's cool in the gang. I think that's it on the news.
We have one more thing.
What's that?
My FU Wrestler of the Week.
Oh yeah.
Let's not forget that.
All right, let's hold on. And now it's time for Choppy's Fuck You Wrestler of the Week.
So, my fuck you wrestler of the week has to be Goldust.
What?
That? What?
What did Goldust do?
What was up with that artist formerly known as Goldust gimmick that was going on in that time period in 1997?
When he broke up with Terry?
Jesus Christ. What was
Jesus!
That?
Jesus!
Exactly. What was going through his mind at that time? First off, you're not Dusty. That's for goddamn sure. Thank God you're not. And then on top of that, you dress like a fucking queer. And then you have the audacity to besmirch the good name of Dusty Rhodes on TV. You, my friend, are a piece of shit, so you can go fuck yourself.
And that fuck you wrestle of the week is sponsored by Rant EM Radio. All right, let's take a break. Let's wet our whistles. The Ham is in studio, and then we're going to come back and do Survivor Series 1997.
Beautiful.
You are listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We're live on the Rant, rantemradio.com, part of the Shining Wizards Network. And Lord Alfred Hayes, take us into the break.
Yep.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
If you're not tuned in to the Shining Wizards, listen to what some of our fans have to say about the show.
Oh my God, I just love the Shining Wizards. It's four fucking virgin marks complaining about a fucking fake fighting show. Keep going, boys. The Stallion fucking loves you.
Tune in live every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. East, rantemradio.com. It's the Shining Wizards, where it's wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
Do you like obscure references?
Vince just did the old Joel Gertner hand dance, which is awesome.
Pointless banter.
It's that chicken I smell. I'm going to roll this rock out of the way.
And political dumb fuckery.
I haven't played this bad since I was in my 20s.
Then join us every weekend on the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, your source for anti-PC entertainment news and commentary.
Hey, it's Mike from the Midnight Jury. Join myself and my co-hosts, Adam, Cal, and Sydney, as we bring to you the best in 80s and 90s pop culture, pro wrestling, and horror movies. You can join in the conversation on Facebook and Twitter, and we are available at our home at WLWstudios.com, along with the Midnight Jury feeds on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. Forget about Blu-ray, forget about iPhones, and forget about flat-screen TVs, and travel back with us to the last old-school generation when it was all about Walkmans, arcades, and malls. Once again, that's the Midnight Jury, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and our home at WLWstudios.com.
Horns up! This is Rock from Radioactive Metal. Join Snowy, Kareem, Aaron, and myself right here on the Shining Wizards Network every Friday for your weekly metal fix. We talk to all your favorite artists, cover all the latest metal news, cover all the latest releases, and feature brand new unsigned bands. So sit back, grab a beer, download the latest episode, and always remember, it's not metal unless it's radioactive metal.
This is the last professional broadcaster, Sam Roberts, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Throwbacks with Phil Rea and Choppy on Rant EM
right
Radio.
Chase. 7 days ago at the Survivor Series, did you or did you not screw Bret Hart?
Some would say, I screwed Bret Hart. Bret Hart would definitely tell you, I screwed him. I look at it from a different standpoint. I look at it from the standpoint of the referee did not screw Bret Hart. Shawn Michaels certainly did not screw Bret Hart. Nor did Vince McMahon screw Bret Hart. I truly believe that Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart. And he can look in the mirror.
I'm sure in some parts of the country right now there's a collective groan.
The one.
when I said he drew her. You don't know if I got a gun, it's fun from the X side of things, but getting some of my rings, everything I want, I get by the beans. Mine, I shine like money that sound like Biggie. Fuck around my town, boogie down my city. Come around, get pound, do the crown, no pity. Watch the sound, 4 pound, 20 round million, get smacked silly for coming out your mug. I'm known for bouncing thugs from the tunnel to the south of clubs. Don't matter, put the chrome to your powder, splatter your abs.
I never muted the mics.
Well, there you go.
So
it's a good thing we didn't say anything.
I don't give a shit.
What a great song.
Big Pun would have been 46 today.
46?
Yeah.
Wow. By the way,
yeah,
a big fan of wrestling.
Big Pun was.
He was a huge DiBiase fan.
Yeah, he was also huge, 600 pounds when he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Big Pun arguably could have been the upper echelon with you know, with Jay and Nas and Big E.
I agree.
He would have been one of the greatest of all time.
Absolutely. Have you heard his son?
Bless you.
His son Chris Rivers is amazing.
I didn't hear his son.
Good shit.
Yeah. All right, so we're back. Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Our Puerto Rican contingent in the chat room is very happy with the song selection.
Oh, yeah? All right. So, any other news before we get into the throwback?
No, let's do this, bro. All
right, you ready?
Let's do it.
And now, here is your throwback of the week. Sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
So, 20 years ago yesterday, was Gang Rules Survivor Series 1997, okay? Sponsored by Karate Fighters. You know what Karate Fighters was?
Oh my god, do I ever.
I'm trying to tell the kid what Karate Fighters was. It was a game where you had two joysticks and two little karate guys, and you push a button and they fight. And the button and the joystick controls the guy's hands and feet. It was like
Rock'em Jack'em?
Like Rock'em Sock'em exactly. Robots. Correct. Yep. Correct. But it was called Karate Fighters. It was a big deal. Choppy's laughing over here because he know he had some problem.
I did, actually. I had Rock'em Sock'em and I had Karate Fighters.
I had Rock'em Sock'em Robots in like in the late 70s, in the early 80s.
That was a great toy.
It was weird because when I was a kid, the game was bigger than the original WWF ring, almost as big. The LJN ring from the 80s, that's how big that game was. So when you got it in for Christmas, it took you like 9 hours to put together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as chuffy, choppy stuffs as Foch. Anyway. Yeah, man. So, this was the... Was it the... The 9th?
Yes.
Of November 1997.
At the Molson Center.
And that's where the Montreal Canadiens play. Now it's called the Bell Center. 20,000...
Yeah, 20,589, I think?
20,593
okay.
Is what I got.
Gotcha.
Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, and a little appearance by Cyrus the Virus.
Oh, God.
Or Jackal is what he was called back
Jackie?
Then.
Sorry, what?
Jackie, what?
Oh, it was dreadful.
Yeah, but listen, before we get into the main event and all the nonsense... Apparently, this was the night that changed the Attitude Era. When you put this online, and this has been going on since Tuesday, everybody's been talking about it. Everybody's like, oh, you know, this is the night, you know, when the controversy happened, and this is the night that all the smart marks were out and about. That's when the internet started getting big and the dirt sheets and all this other shit. I was like, listen, I didn't feel that way when I saw it. I knew something was up. Like, I knew something wasn't good. Like, I knew something was bad. That wasn't supposed to happen. We'll get into the main event, but people are on both sides of the fence, so we'll get into that in a couple of minutes.
What a work.
Let's get into the first match.
Can I just say something? This pay-per-view, this card, was god-awful.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it I watched it like twice.
It, dude, I... Let's just go to the first one.
It was the Godwins. The
Steers, it was the Steers and Queers versus the Godwins and New Age Outlaws.
So it was the Godwins, New Age Outlaws versus the Headbangers and the New Blackjacks.
God, Barry Windham was so out of shape in this match.
Yeah.
He was, what, 38 years old at this time?
This was the start of the New Age Outlaws, though.
It was.
I listened to Road Dogg on JBL's Legends Sit Down. He was on the recent one.
Okay.
And, you know, his story. You know, he was a, you know, Middle East.
He was in the Gulf War. The
Gulf War veteran. Had a really bad drug problem.
A very big junkie.
He left with Jarrett, went back to the company. And the story is that Vince Russo was booking him against Billy Gunn during the house shows.
Yeah.
And they were just bored. It wasn't working.
Yeah.
So Vince Russo goes, well, what if I just put you guys together? And that's when that's where the magic started. And, you know, he's a humble dude. Now he's part of creative. He's got a really big job now. He's been sober for a minute, you know?
When we were at NXT last year, he actually was a lot bigger than what I expected him to be.
He's a tall dude.
6'4", I want to say.
Very, 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 very famous family. All the brothers wrestled. Of course, Bullet Bob is a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Brad Armstrong was probably their guy. He was like one of the best wrestlers ever at one point. He just never had it on camera. Like, he was one of those guys that can wrestle his ass off. He was like a Dean Malenko type, but he never was charismatic.
I thought he was a pretty good announcer on ECW TV.
Yeah, but Brad Armstrong?
Was it Brad or Brian? No, it was Brad. Yeah. He did a couple of one-shots on ECW TV for WWE.
But he was the constant professional. And him and his dad would get matches with Flair when Flair came into the territory. So he was the candy man for a minute in WCW. He wore the striped pants.
I remember that.
Hey, man. I'm the candy man.
Wasn't he part of the No Limit Soldiers at one point?
I think so. And his older brother was part of the Young Pistols.
Oh, good God.
So it was Tracy Smothers.
Yeah.
You know, the water pistols, as I call them. Yeah, I mean, the Survivor Series matches were, like, to be desired. The next one was the Truth Commission.
Oh, my God.
Jackal, Recon, Sniper, and the Interrogator versus the DOA. This was fucking terrible.
The Interrogator, by the way, is Kurgan.
Is Kurgan.
From the Oddities.
7 foot.
Sniper was Bull Buchanan.
Yes.
And Jackal was Cyrus Tavares. The other guy didn't know who he was.
Who cares?
It was god awful. This match should have never been. This should have been a house show match, not a pay per view match.
It should have been a pre show match.
Good God! It was like should have been the kickoff match to Survivor Series. It's so bad. Yeah, Kurgan won. He was the dominant force in this freaking match.
Yeah, and Jackal, who was Cyrus the Virus, who's now in New Japan doing their commentary.
I think he's a great commentator.
And you saw that when he got eliminated, yeah. And he sat with Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, and he was calling it. I thought that was fantastic.
I think he's a great talker. He's definitely a good commentator. And when he left WWF and went to ECW, Paulie saw him as money, as a commentator. And he's great. But, like, as a wrestler, ugh, good God. Get the fuck out the ring. Thank God they got rid of his ass. Long-haired freak.
All right, next we had Team Canada, which was Doug Furness and Phil LaFon, and the Hart Foundation, Neidhart and the Bulldog, versus...
Fuck Dust.
Gold Dust. Mark Merrow and the Vader. The Vader. And a newcomer, Steve Blackman. Pennsylvania's own Steve Blackman.
The man that almost killed Shane McMahon.
The man that almost killed Shane McMahon.
This match was god awful.
I like the promo though. Vader's
with
like
Sable.
Yeah, with Sable.
Sable was hot.
Nick German claims that someone groped her booby at ringside. If you look real close, he posts a picture of it.
I gotta check it out.
And our homeboy and his homeboy Mark, who's also on the page, pointed it out to us too. And Mark Marrow saw it and got
pissed. So they grow fake titties. Who cares? They're fake.
Yeah. Have you ever held a fake tit?
Never.
It's terrible.
I'm glad I didn't.
You're not missing anything. Anyway.
Continue.
Anyway, that's another story. I can't get into it now.
Yeah, it's okay.
Because you know who was here.
Hi.
Hi. The, what do you call it? So, Vader's promo was interesting. He's like, you know, we're not a team.
We're not all friends.
We're not all friends and this, that. So he tried, Vader understood the magnitude of the night, I should say. But the match was terrible.
The one good spot that I enjoyed of this match was when Furnace did the belly-to-belly on Vader.
Yeah, but you know, Phil LaFon, those guys were fantastic, by the way. Furnace and LaFon were...
I like them better in ECW.
Yeah, Dave and I did an episode about these guys a couple years ago. These guys were the real deal. They weren't that good in this match, though. Except for that belly-to-belly that
Doug Furnace did.
Doug Furnace was at one point the strongest man...
In the Olympics, I believe
he was. Yeah, he was, but he was like a Pan American guy too. He was also one of the strongest men competitions.
Correct. Is he still alive?
No,
he passed away, right?
Phil LaFon is still alive. So the only Canadian in this is Phil LaFon. Everybody else is defective.
Well, Phil LaFon had no charisma whatsoever. So fuck.
Right, but everybody else was defector. Neidhart was defector. The Bulldog was not. Bulldog was from England, and Doug Furnace was from Oklahoma.
And Neidhart was from where? Las Vegas,
Reno, Nevada.
Reno, Nevada. Yeah.
So the only Canadian on Team Canada was Phil LaFon.
What a shit show.
Good. The crowd was hot, though, man. The crowd was hot.
Because of fucking Team Canada. Of course they're going to be hot for their own team.
But they were hot all night, though. Like, they were hot for Shamrock and all them.
Shamrock was over. He was way over.
Shamrock was over.
That I agree with.
So the Bulldog was the survivor of the of that match.
Yeah, it was steel chair shot. Yeah,
he beat Vader. For a win, so
was that the one with steel? Did he use a steel chair or was the bell?
The bell.
It was the bell. Sorry, it was the bell.
My snooze of the night, though, and I thought like was Kane and Mankind.
No way! I woke up for this one.
I was just like,
no, it was good.
It wasn't terrible, but I'm just at that point. I wasn't into Mankind. Like I wanted to invest because he had just left ECW and. You know, he was doing the whole promo thing, and I was at his farewell, and I was like, I couldn't get into the gimmick until they started messing with him, until he became a face. I wasn't feeling his character, so this match for me wasn't like over the top amazing.
It was good.
It was okay.
The spot that really woke me up is when Kane kind of choke slammed him right into the announce table from the ring. That was a nice little spot they did.
Yeah, you need to go back and watch this pay-per-view.
He needs
to go back.
Don't put your son through this.
No, he has to watch some of this. I'm telling you, he has to see the Kane Mankind thing.
Mankind was good.
He's got to see how bad fucking Ahmed Johnson was.
And I've already seen the last two.
No, yeah, but we'll get into that in a second.
Ahmed Johnson was Mr. Botchamania. For sure, he was
Ahmed Johnson horrible. Was so bad. He was like, you see how Titus O'Neil was bad. He's worse than Titus O'Neil.
I think Titus O'Neil's passable. Better than Jinder.
He's sloppy.
You think so?
Titus was sloppy. He doesn't wrestle that much anymore, but he was sloppy, dude.
I didn't. I really didn't like Ahmed Johnson. He was all physique. That's all he was. And if I'm not mistaken, all he did was win the Intercontinental Championship, where he didn't even deserve it because he was not the caliber wrestler to be Intercontinental Champion, and they still give it to him anyways.
Uptown Georgie, you're welcome. He said, thanks for the big pun, love.
Of course.
See, everybody's listening in. And they all got it was Pun's birthday, that's why I played Pun. Pun is well-respected in the Ray household.
I love Big Pun.
Anyway, yeah, so... This was, like Choppy said, most of this was a hard watch. It gets a little better now, besides Ahmed Johnson.
What, DOA? Not DOA.
It was Ahmed Johnson, Ken Shamrock, and the LOD, which I hated the LOD. I hated this version of the LOD. That's not the LOD I grew up with. That wasn't the LOD from 1987.
You know what pissed me off is the fact that, you know, I understand age... changes a man's body.
Well, Hawk was all messed up anyway.
Fuck my life. Was Hawk so out of shape? But then Animal looked great.
And then he fought The Nation, who was D-Lo, Farooq, comma, and The Rock. Comma is, of course, The
Godfather.
Right, okay. They were a good team. This was the Nation of Domination were good, man. Farooq, I love D'Lo Brown, first of all. D'Lo Brown could work.
I think D'Lo Brown is probably the most underrated talent that WWF had.
And this was the start of The Rock.
Yes, it was.
The faces of God.
Yeah. But he was, The Rock was the showcase of the team at this point. He was about to break away from them soon. But seeing the Road Warriors like this, man, just... Oh my god!
And they had the straps on top of that.
They were the champs. Well, they had dropped them to the. I think the Outlaws beat them after that.
Yeah, they did.
But and they wound up
interfering in the match. And yeah. Guess who's in the room?
Who?
Nick German suplex.
Oh Jesus!
Jesus!
Anyway,
how's our Rent-A-Cop doing?
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Shout out to Matty Legend, man. That was Matty Legend's clip.
Yeah.
So Shamrock beats The Rock.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, well, because the Nation was so over. I mean, the Nation was winning matches at that point. They were hot. And
how many gimmicks did Kama go through?
Oh, he was
Papa Shango.
He was Papa Shango.
He was the ultimate fighting machine, comma,
Mustafa.
And then he just became comma.
And then became the Godfather. He was also...
The Good Father.
The Good Father. In USWA, he was... what was his name? Hold on. Hold on a second.
Nick German just said, fuck you, Chobby, because I call him a Rent-A-Cop.
That's not nice. He was...
He said Paul Blart here for service.
Yeah, he was the Soul Taker in USWA.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But this was a good match. I enjoyed this match. Mm. Outside of the Road Warriors, again, I can't... This is not the Road Warriors I grew up with, man. It was terrible. It was bad to watch them. The next match was good, though.
Yeah.
My favorite match of the night.
Yeah, it was very good. I don't know. You know what?
You like Kane and...
I like Kane. I liked the Owen Hart Stone Cold match.
But the main event was...
Main event was on point.
Main event was one of the... Was a Meltzer special.
What, did Meltzer give it 4 stars?
He gave it 3 3/4.
Okay.
According to this.
Jeez. 3 3/4. It couldn't be a solid 4? Jesus Christ, Dave. What a bag of douche.
Okay, terrific.
You know what's like just as good as this pay-per-view? Was shit stains on my underwear. That's how good this pay-per-view was. This pay-per-view was absolutely horrific. On to this match, though. This match was pretty good.
So we all know the history. I was at SummerSlam that year. That was when
you and
Kevin Castle, John Draper, and all the crew from Castle Heights.
Yep.
Owen breaks Austin's neck.
Legit.
Oh.
That was actually pretty good.
So he breaks his neck, and Austin's out for revenge. Now, Austin just is on a tear. He is so over at this point.
He could do no wrong.
No, this was the pinnacle of Stone Cold. This was the start of the legend.
97 Stone Cold was so funny, though.
Dude, the shirts... The promos, the anti-establishment, it was all good. All of it was fantastic. So he beats Owen Hart, who's with the whole crew. Doesn't matter, because...
I love the stunner that he gave Neidhart, though.
Yeah, this match only went 4 minutes.
I know.
Crazy, right?
It was good, though.
Yeah, it was good, but like...
We have to keep in mind, the reason it was 4 minutes is because he was still legitimately injured, though.
Correct.
Yes.
So he worked hurt, which for me
he worked hurt for 2 solid years.
Going back with that though, it's you would never know unless he told you.
Exactly.
And he worked a lot of guys work hurt. It's part of the
but with a broken neck.
Listen, Kurt Angle did it.
I know. I'm still surprised Kurt Angle's still walking how many matches he's wrestled.
What do you want? That's not. I have to take that down. There's a Big Bird sticker on the door from the previous person that lived in this room.
Gotcha.
So he's pointing it out to me like I can't see the fucking Big Bird sign. It'll come down. Get me a poster for Christmas. How about that? Get your stepfather a poster.
Get us the count.
7 drops of goo on my lip. Twelve drops of goo on my lip.
We gotta start doing that when we go back to shows. Start doing the Oh man,
he's got the count.
That's awesome. You know who likes the count?
Who?
The baby.
He likes the count.
He goes. He's like this.
Oh, like he's having a seizure.
Oh, he's like. Argh.
That's awesome.
But the main event. Main event was the two most controversial figures at the time.
Let me play this clip that WWE put out.
Please.
It's like a 3-minute clip.
One of the most famous things I can remember was the Montreal Screwjob.
I'm a big fan of Bret the Hitman Hart and Shawn Michaels, and I can't believe what went down during the Montreal Screwjob.
This match was a long journey in itself, but 18 months.
That's what the fans
to get it done. And the smart money is that you will never, ever see it again.
The story that unfolded, the rivalry between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. As a fan watching this, I had no idea what was going on as it was happening.
Look at this!
Oh, you're kidding me.
Michaels, are you going to try to beat Bret Hart with a sharpshooter? Yes, he is!
Watching it go down, as a fan, it kind of blended the lines of reality and who was the winner, and everyone was confused.
Are you kidding me?
And I remember watching this personally, saying, I don't think I saw him taps.
I was as shocked as Bret the Hitman Hart was, but I was not quite as upset.
Then as things unfolded and history was made, we find out he didn't taps.
What happened? What happened? Bret Hart gave up on the sharpshooter.
You saw Bret Hart go to town. He destroyed the set. He was spitting in the air. He was writing WCW, and you knew something big was going on.
Wow, you talk about controversy. This crowd is living.
I would have done whatever I had to do, so I can't go on either side of that. I take care of myself, and that's all there is to it.
The Montreal Screwjob really made me hate Vince McMahon, because I loved Bret Hart, and just the idea that Bret got screwed and that Vince was the one who did it, and it just made me think, oh gosh, what, this guy's such a... I would never want to work for this guy.
Michaels with a sharpshooter has become champion, and Bret Hart is standing in disbelief.
I never thought I'd see Bret Hart in another WWE ring ever again.
Ladies and gentlemen, good night from Montreal.
I like that clip. That's why I played it.
I think that clip lost its legitimacy when Santino started talking.
I did not see him taps.
I did not see him taps.
I pulled up an article from whatsculture.com.
Okay.
It's the top 10 reasons why the Screwjob was the biggest work ever.
I agree with it.
And this is your...
A work, dude.
All right. So, let's see. Let's go through them real quick, and then we'll get into the match. I thought you were going to pour it for me, but...
I couldn't open it.
You couldn't open it? It's all right. I'll forgive you. All right. Be a good little helper and put this away. Thanks, pal. All right. Hold on a second. All right. Number 10. Vince McMahon legally could not have screwed Bret Hart due to creative control in Bret's contract. That's number 10. Okay. You agree with that?
Legally... Okay, here's the thing about the legality of things, right? In the contract, Bret had creative control of his character up until he left, correct?
Correct.
All right. However,
I'm the owner of the company. If I tell you, hey, you're going to have to lose the belt on such and such a day, and he gave Brett like 2 months in advance to let him know that he's going to drop the belt in November, and Brett says no, I say, motherfucker, you're going to get stripped of the belt, you give me the belt, and you stay home for the next 2 months, and that's it, and then you go to WCW. I don't give a shit. This is a work, guys. They made Bret Hart the ultimate babyface after this. They made Vince the ultimate heel after this. And for people to still believe that this is a this was legit, it was not legit. Because they will not let let him write WCW in the air on live pay-per-view. They wouldn't let him do that. They would just cut the black, and that was it. Come on, guys. Let's be realistic.
All right, number nine. Bret and Vince are old-school kayfabe. Bret did one last job for the company because he felt bad about taking the WCW money.
He did feel bad. He felt terrible about leaving. He didn't want to leave.
Number eight. Why was Vince at ringside that night? He wasn't calling the action.
He was not.
So why was he at ringside?
Why was he at ringside?
Yeah.
Just boo Bret.
Because it was part of the storyline, dude. You gotta remember, he was at ringside. Once the deed was done, he became the most hated villain in wrestling. It had to be done. The whole Mr. McMahon character was done that night.
All right, number seven. Too many conflicting accounts and the suggestion that it was worked.
You also got to keep in mind, you know what was filming at this time? Wrestling with Shadows. So don't you think this made for a perfect movie?
Number six. Everyone benefited from the story.
Of course. Absolutely. Shawn went on to become a WWF champion until WrestleMania. Bret went on to WCW to make $3.5 million a year. Vince became the top bad guy in the company, and then the company became, as a whole, became profitable.
Number five, the Hart family and the McMahon family relationship.
Well, what do you mean? What is this?
Well, the Hart and the McMahon family owed each other a lot, business relationship-wise.
Of course. I mean, Owen Hart stayed with WWF. I don't think it was that bad.
All between Calgary and Stu's promotion, stuff like that.
Of course. Okay. Keep in mind that Bret trained Edge and Christian.
Jericho and...
A lot of those guys.
Benoit.
Come
Brian
on.
Brian Pillman.
Test.
All right. Well, we can't... We'll forgive him for test. Number four. The backstage punch was not filmed, and Vince's black eye looked like makeup.
To me, it looked like makeup.
I don't think it was makeup.
I think it was.
If this was a work, which I don't think it was, if this was a work, I think Vince took it. To make it legitimate, because I believe that Vince McMahon will go to hell and back. He's a fucking old school carny worker. Vince McMahon is the ultimate carny worker. He will go above and beyond to A, keep kayfabe at the time, and B, take one for the team. The guy at one point, he's 73 years old and he's still taking bumps in the ring. You know what I'm saying? Like why he doesn't have to. So I'll give you my opinion when we're done, but
okay.
I'll hold on a second. Let's finish this article.
I believe it was real.
Okay. Well, we'll get your opinion in a few minutes. There was no way Vince could put himself in that position to begin with.
How do you figure? He's the owner. He can do whatever the fuck he wants.
This is an article that was...
I know.
All right?
I know.
All right. Number two. Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer full account and friendship with Bret. You know, of course we know the Observer was the Bible of dirt sheets.
Right? Yes, of course.
So, apparently, Meltzer had a relationship with Bret. Hence why the whole dirt sheet thing was... This was like the start of the online... bullshit.
Yeah.
You know,
the chat rooms.
This is the start. Yeah, this is the start of it. All right. And the number one reason, Wrestling with Shadows.
Thank you. Wrestling with Shadows would not have been a good movie if this didn't happen. This had to happen. The guy who filmed it knew this was going to happen. Come on, guys. Let's be realistic. Keep an open mind.
You want to play the end of the match?
Let's do it.
All right.
Sharpshooter? Yes, he is! Are you kidding me?
fucking Earl Hebner.
This crowd is living. Michael for the sharpshooter has become the WWF champion. And Bret Hart is standing in disbelief. Ladies and gentlemen, good night from Montreal.
What was your question?
When they were showing the sign and Shawn Michaels, is that one who is running WCW?
What, this version, the network version, doesn't show you is that Brett trashed ringside and wrote WCW in the air.
Correct.
The original pay-per-view had that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to tell people. The original pay-per-view had it. The network doesn't have it, but the original pay-per-view content had it.
But I don't know why network doesn't have it. Because they already bought WCW.
It's not because of WCW. This is where I don't think the entire thing was a work. I think it was a work up to an extent. I think it was a work where Brett knew he was going to lose. And I think it was a... he didn't want to lose it then. He wanted to drop the belt the next night on Raw.
He was not contractually obligated at that point.
I understand that. But he still had creative control. So he did though. He had control.
He did, but if you're the owner of the company, you can always break a contracts are just words, man.
Obviously, but now listen. The majority of his people were on a handshake. Like he was like, "Okay, I'm shaking your hand. Here's a deal." They didn't sign long-term deals. Vince never gave anybody a long-term deal. Not even Hogan. Hogan didn't get one. Andre didn't get one. It was all about either pay per per diem. Or a handshake of you're going to get X amount of money for each show, and we'll keep it moving. So I think it was a work until the fucking finish. I think Shawn knew what he was fronting, okay? Because you could tell Triple H was like all over the place. You could see him and Briscoe basically dragging him out, like with the quickness. Vince didn't expect to get spit on either, I don't think. Hence why the door was closed during that documentary. It was unauthorized. And the way his wife carried on in the back. Like, come on, you knew. Like, she was like just... Like, who the... that's so, like, out of character. Like, why would she even... Nobody knew who she was. She's like some dumpy lady that nobody... Like, nobody knew who Bret Hart's wife was until that night. Like, I think it was a work until the end. I don't think Brett was supposed to lose. And I think he found out that night he was losing. And he got pissed. And probably didn't want to do it. And Shawn and them were like, all right, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to put him in the move and I'm going to ring the bell. So once he knew it was the fucking move was put on and the bell rang, that's when I think Brett lost all of composure and was like, you know what, I'm out of here anyway. Fuck you. Spit on you. Trash the fucking... The area.
So you agree that Brett knew about it?
I think Brett knew he was going to lose, but not that night. I think he was beefing. He was beefing with Vince and wanted to drop the belt the next night on Raw. And first of all, his story never changes. Between the movie and when him and Shawn got back together a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Any interview he's done. Whether it be for Rolling Stone or, like, one of these Canadian fucking sports shows or whatever it was, his story never changes. Vince McMahon will hold it and be like, oh, yeah, well, Brett screwed Brett because Brett didn't get what he wanted. That's basically what he was saying. Like, Brett screwed Brett because Brett didn't get what he wanted. Brett didn't want to lose the belt on pay-per-view, which was stupid because he was leaving anyway. He was in limbo. Like, do I take this $3.5 million or do I take the $1.5 million from Vince? Because Vince wasn't giving long-term contracts.
it was unheard of to give anybody at that time for this realm of entertainment any kind of long-term deal. So I believe it was a work until the end. I believe Hebner was in on it. I believe Sean was in on it. I don't know about Trip. I believe Matt. I think Briscoe knew. I think Slaughter knew. I think Patterson knew. I think all those fucking guys knew. I think it was a work until the end. And that's, you know, that's how I look at it. And if you watch it again, and I watched it twice this week.
I've seen this pay-per-view. I've seen the ending of that match
a million times.
So many times.
Right? So the question I put on Facebook tonight and Twitter was,
did Vince
screw Brett, or did Brett screw Brett? What do you, now, you thinking Brett screwed Brett?
No, here's the thing. Here's my point on the whole, not, okay, I still think it was a work, but whatever. Throughout the whole history of the WWF, especially Bret Hart's relationship with Vince, I've always felt, I always thought Bret was and Nick will attest to this, Bret was a phenomenal wrestler. Wouldn't you agree?
That's fair.
He was phenomenal.
Course, of course he was good in the ring. He was excellence of execution. That was his gimmick.
Do you ever think he was the face of the company, or just he was the guy that Vince, okay, like, say, for example, if Vince tried it out with Brett for a minute, and he didn't like the way things were going with Brett, so he switched it over to Yoko. And then from Yoko, it went to Hogan. And it didn't work with Hogan, and then he went to fucking, it's like he never trusted Brett fully as the face of the company. He was always the I didn't want to say transitional champion, because that's wrong for me to say, because he was not a transitional champion. He had some lengthy title reigns. But I always felt like Vince didn't see Brett as money until 1996, when him and Austin.
What about when he beat Flair, though?
That was in 92, but he was testing the waters with Brett at that time.
See, here's the thing, okay? After Hogan, there was no face of that company.
Correct.
Because of the direction of the company was taking. The industry, it wasn't just that Vince didn't, it was just not because Vince just didn't trust Brett. It was because the industry didn't trust anybody. Like, there was no, after Hogan, it was like,
it went from Brett to Diesel to Shawn to Brett to Austin. I mean,
yeah, to Bob Backlund. I get it. But you gotta look at the bigger picture here. Like, why would Vince McMahon put himself in a situation knowing the like,
he had to protect his company.
From what, though? Like,
in his mind,
is it credibility? Because you're putting the belt back now. Now you're putting the belt on Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. In his mind, though, he always felt that Brett was going to take that belt over to the rival company and maybe possibly tarnish the legacy of the title on WCW Nitro TV. That was Vince's big concern. And Shawn put these ideas in his head, and Hunter put these ideas in his head. There was legit conversations that Triple H and Shawn spoke to Vince that there's a possibility that Brett will take this belt over to the rival company, and we don't want that to happen. I think, I'm telling you, dude, it wasn't
Vince. If they had that conversation, maybe they had that conversation, but I don't think Brett would do something like that.
I'm not saying he would.
No, but that's the thing, man. That's another thing. Like, Vince had stooges. Vince had guys. Vince was still booking with Patterson at that point.
And Patterson and Brett were, like, best friends.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it was still a small-time company in the back. It wasn't creative control. There wasn't a team of people, talent relations. It didn't get that big yet, dude. I'm not convinced that Vince McMahon would take a fucking shiner and get spit on and have his equipment trashed. I'm sorry. Like, if he's going that route, then you could have let him in on it. Like, okay, here's what's going to happen. You're going to lose, and you're going to trash it, and I'm going to let you hit me. Like, why didn't the cameras go back there? Why wouldn't you? You're filming a documentary about pro wrestling. Why wouldn't you let that camera? I can tell you why, because it didn't go the way Brett wanted it to go. So people are like, well, Brett screwed Brett because Brett was a baby. He didn't want to lose the title. That's a legitimate
argument.
Yeah. On the other side, you're saying Vince wanted to protect the company and protect the legitimacy of his title of the story and keep the belt at home base, and that's how it went.
I think that if I were to answer your original question about who, if it was Vince screwed Brett or Brett screwed Brett, I would have to say it was probably a little bit of both. Like Vince, I would think it was a little bit of both ends. I think Vince screwed Brett, but then also Brett gave Vince no choice.
You see, here's another conflicting story. Brett claims that he was under contract negotiations with both of them.
Correct.
Vince wasn't going to give him the long-term money.
Correct.
That WCW was giving him.
Correct.
So did he decide already that he was going to WCW that night? Or that week? Or that month? Or that year? Like,
I mean, there were talks going from like 96.
I know.
And it's crazy how...
You know? So, like, you know, in sports a lot of times when guys retire or they want to retire with the team they started with, like the owners will give them a contract for a day and have them do the big press conference and they're going to retire. Like Michael Strahan did it with the Giants.
Correct.
Mike Piazza. All these guys did it with their teams. It happens in hockey a lot. Like guys will sign a one-day deal or whatever. Okay. So why not give Brett his due? Why not let him drop the fucking belt on Raw instead of doing it on a pay-per-view? If that's the way he wanted his character to be portrayed, at that point, why? Was that Vince doing a dick move? Me like, you know what? No, shame on you. You're going to WCW. You know, we're taking a belt from you tonight.
And he also,
We're not gonna tell you we're taking the belt from you tonight.
And I'm pretty sure in Vince's mind, he was like, I pretty much orchestrated this whole deal for him in WCW. I've made you a 5-time world champion with my company. I've given you everything you asked for, and now you're pretty much not doing me the favor after all I have done for you. So Vince, you know what? Vince screwed Brett, and in the end, Brett screwed Brett as well. I'm sorry. And this fucking match, this fucking thing in history is never going to go away. I'm pretty sure in 2027, it's maybe 30 years later, and we're still going to be talking about this fucking pay-per-view. And still debating whether this was a work or not. And you want to know something? I still think to this very day this is a fucking work. And, you know, it is what it is. Do I think Brett was a little bit unprofessional that night? Fuck yeah, he was. Do I think Vince was unprofessional? Of course he was. I think it was just a lack of communication that night. And that's why it went down the way it did.
Right. I'm just not convinced that Vince would take a black eye and get spit on, and like he takes bumps and this, that, and third. I just, that part of it was reality. Like there was some kind of disagreement where he wasn't supposed to drop the belt, or maybe he knew about it, but they did it another way. Like maybe when he got him in the sharpshooter.
Maybe it wasn't supposed to be in the sharpshooter. He was supposed to drop it. Maybe he was supposed to do it like with...
He didn't tap.
He didn't tap.
You heard him ring the fucking bell. Ring the bell.
Earl Hebner said, yeah.
Right. Like, but there was nothing. Like, there's something wrong there, man. It was visible. Like, and you saw how they pulled Sean away. Like, they didn't...
They didn't pull Sean away right away because Sean sat right. If you watch the footage, Sean was sitting right next to Brett.
Well, he was catching his breath too.
Yeah, and then he was kind of yelling at Vince as well, like "What the hell's going on?"
Well, he looked over at Vince, and that's when Triple H, he grabbed the belt from ringside, and that's when Triple H and Briscoe grabbed him and like, "Yo, let's get out of here."
Yeah,
it's about to get ugly in Canada.
Look, everyone knew what the fuck was going on. Even the fucking fans, what the fuck was going on?
See, I don't know. See that I disagree with you about. I don't think the fans had. If you were sitting ringside,
right? That's what I'm saying. Sitting ringside.
If you were sitting ringside, you had a clue because again, it's visibly fucked up. Like that, something bad just happened.
But here's another thing. People are so shocked that Vince did it. You remember what Vince did with fucking Wendi Richter? With Moolah. That was another thing that he screwed. That's not the first time he screwed a wrestler.
Vince has screwed a lot of guys and girls. for the sake of
the business.
The business. It wasn't. I don't think he ever took any of that stuff personally until that night.
Yeah.
Like, how could you do this to me after all I've done for you? And you know what I'm saying? Like,
and you remember the backlash of this after the match happened?
I played that clip for you. Like, they did interviews. Like,
I understand, but what I'm saying is, if you read some of Bret's book and some of Mick Foley's book and The Rock's book and Stone Cold's book, a lot of people were planning on jumping ship because they felt that they could not trust Vince McMahon as a boss. Like, Owen was thinking about leaving. Foley was thinking about leaving. If I'm not mistaken, even fucking at certain points, Austin was kind of debating, like, what am I doing here kind of deal. But, like, and to Bret's credit, he told these guys, look, stay where you're at. You do not want to go to a sinking ship. You want to stay with where you with a solid company because you guys are not going to go anywhere.
See, Nick German just posted the Best of the Survivor Series videotape that they showed the footage. They showed the footage from that night of Bret trashing.
Yeah.
But the original pay per view that I bought that pay per view and that footage that they didn't. I saw all that.
Yeah, it's on. It's on. I'm telling you, it's on there. I mean,
I might even have my original videotape from that night.
I'm sure you do.
Right, and it had that stuff on. Again, like I think they banked off that. I think that they because Bret left, that gave them the insight to be like, you know what, fuck him. I'm gonna air that footage, or I'm gonna have this interview with Jim Ross. And make it look like a it was a work or make it look like it was really real. Like, I don't know. It's for me. It's still talked about 20 years later. It's still
Nick Sherman just says, watch the videotape. It's not there. LOL.
Oh, it's not on a videotape.
Apparently, that's what he says.
Oh no, but it was on the pay per view though.
Definitely on.
I watched that.
So did I. I remember that.
Okay. You know, again, I think it was a work until the end. I think there was a plan in place that everybody agreed upon, and then they were like, you know what? F you. It's not going to happen like that. And you could tell it was visibly fucked up. Like, as a fan of pro wrestling for 30, 40 years, when someone gets injured, you could see it. When something goes wrong at ringside, you could see it. There's little things that you see. This wasn't so little. Something just dropped.
Yeah, it was.
There's crap in here. There's just stuff that I have to unpack. There, you know, again, it's. You don't know. First of all, none of us will ever know the truth.
Oh, no, absolutely not. We have opinions.
Well, yeah, and Bret kept the same story. Vince really didn't say much after that Jim Ross thing. Vince didn't give a shit, to be honest with you. And Vince
moved. Of course not, because he's a billionaire now.
Well, he wasn't a billionaire back then.
No, he was a millionaire.
He was at the balls of his ass at that point, because you know what? This was right in the middle of it. WCW was picking up steam. They were paying people out left and right. The NWO was in full effect. And this was... people say that this pay-per-view was the turning point of the company. At that time, this was the Attitude Era turning. This was coming into Austin, into Rock, into Triple H, into Mankind, and Taker, and what have you. Because of what Bret Hart did to the company, this gave them the incentive to be creative and do the whole Attitude, tits and ass, swearing, and crotch chopping, and stunning.
And now, mind you, people, this was already happening. Like the whole crotch chopping, giving the finger, cursing. They had started doing this in early 97. Now, this right here was pretty much the stamp of approval. This night was the stamp of approval telling the audience, this is what the direction that the company's going on. If you don't like it, change the channel. But we're sticking with the guys that brought us to the dance. We're going to go with Austin. We're going to go with The Rock. We're going to go with Triple H. We're going to go with Shawn. We're going to go with Ken Shamrock. We're going to go with the New Age Outlaws. Mankind, Terry Funk, in 1998, there was no question that WWF was on fire, literally on fire. WCW could not touch these guys in terms of storylines.
No, they just had more talent.
That's all it was. All WCW had just
and better production.
WCW had
quantity. That's what they had. Whether it was money, whether it was wrestlers, they had quantity.
Production.
Quality. Now, quality was WWF in 98. Quality, the quality storylines, quality talent, and they had to pretty much build from the ground up, starting with in 96 with Austin winning the King of Ring until 97 when they screwed Bret, and then that's where you got your core roster right there. At least I think so.
Right.
I mean, they had some really good talent at that time.
Yeah, but, you know, just getting back to this whole thing, I feel like it was... I don't think the entire thing was a work. I think it was a work until the end. I think there was something agreed upon, like I said, and then something happened that night or that week or that weekend.
Something.
Right. For them to be like, nah, we're going to screw Bret. Like, and then make an angle out of it. And that's what they did. They banked on it. They made more money off that after that than Bret probably made that calendar year. You know what I'm saying?
Correct.
Inadvertently, but I think Vince had the foresight to bank on turning tragedy, like Louis Anderson used to say,
yeah,
turning tragedy into comedy.
Correct.
Same kind of thing, like turn something bad into something good.
Well, Vince is a genius when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah,
he's a genius.
Oh, he's the carny master, dude.
At one point. Now Vince is definitely not a genius. He's way off his rocker now. But like at that time, like 30, 20 years ago, he was a fucking genius.
Of course.
Smartest guy in wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Paul Heyman are probably like neck and neck in terms of like smart, the two most smartest guys in wrestling. But now Vince is just...
It gave Vince the whole anti-establishment Mr. McMahon character.
Yes, yes, yes.
I don't think he woke up with that. I think it took something like this to put that into motion. And of course, you had Austin to catapult that, and then the corporate champion with The Rock and the corporate ministry taking Stephanie.
You ever think when I first saw the face-to-face interaction in '98 with Vince and Austin, like when Vince is like full on Mr. McMahon, I was like, is this gonna work?
They put the belts on him a few times, like the ECW belt, they put the
WWF title.
He won the Rumble. Didn't he win the Rumble one year?
He did win the 99 Rumble. He did.
Right?
Yep.
So
it was a little like...
It was over the top.
A little too much.
It was too carny.
You know what's funny though? Is when Vince wins the Royal Rumble and then he starts pouring the beer down his throat like Austin did every time he win a match. It was so funny.
Yeah, this. So in terms of stories and money being made, I think this was the turning point of the Attitude Era.
Yeah,
I think this something like this sadly had to happen because I don't know. Like people are convinced, fans are convinced that all of this other stuff happened because of the Montreal Screwjob.
Yes, yeah.
So I agree. You agree with that?
I agree. Hey, Shining Wizards Tony's in the house.
What's up, Shining Wizards Tony?
Hello, my friend. Yeah, I agree. If it wasn't for... You know why? Because this event put all the focus on the WWF. And then it started putting more eyeballs on the product. And people was like, wow, what's going on over here? Like, why did this happen? And because of this, one wrestler appeared on two shows on the same night. You had Ravishing Rick Rude appearing on WCW Nitro Live, and then you had Rick Rude appearing on a taped Raw the night after, I believe it was the night after or 2 weeks after the Montreal Screwjob, if you remember that.
It was, at that point, it was all guns blazing.
Yes.
You know?
Tired as fuck, how you doing?
Yeah, Tony.
Same as here. Same here, dude. We're tired.
Same here. But thank you for coming out tonight.
Thank you.
The Wiz is doing some big things in the network. Got some new shows coming on, and we're very excited about that.
Are we taking calls, by the way?
We can. I mean,
it's up to you. I don't
give a shit. I mean,
because you had mentioned taking calls, but it's up to you.
No, it's almost 11 o'clock. I mean, we could take calls if you want to, but
yeah.
People, like I said, did Bret screw? That was the question. Did Bret screw Bret,
or did Vince screw Bret?
I think it was a little bit of both.
Thank you. That's what I said.
But again, you know,
does the industry go the way it goes if this never happened? That's my
That's
my other question to you.
It would not. I don't think they would have. I don't think you would have had the Mr. McMahon character if it wasn't for this. I don't think you would have had Austin versus McMahon. I don't think you would have had Triple H leading the pact of DX. I don't think you would have had, for example, Mankind changing gimmicks every left and right. It was very like this had to happen for the company to, you know, kind of change things around for themselves and make the company better. I still think that is. I know you have a different opinion. Your 80s was the best time period for you because it drew out so much emotion out for you because you remembered it vividly. But for me, the 90s was, to me, my favorite period of wrestling because I had ECW, I had WCW, and then I had the WWF at the time. And it was those were my three. I'll never forget those memories, man. I'll never forget those days.
I'm not gonna discredit the 90s.
Oh, I didn't say you didn't.
No, I'm not going to. Cause I was in my 20s, and I was with ECW. Like, I was right in it. Right out of high school, I was with ECW. And I was the guy that watched Raw and taped Nitro every Monday.
Yeah.
Like, that was me, you know? So, I was in it. I was invested. I just didn't have... I had a loyalty to WWF because of my upbringing. And I didn't get any of that other stuff until later on in my
life. You were a New York guy.
But that wasn't... It was just a regional thing. It wasn't on purpose. It was the way TV was, you know? And the way cable evolved and shit like that. I don't... You know... But you guys all know my cable story, but... Yeah. I don't have to rehash that. However, I just think something like this had to happen.
Of course.
It wasn't proactive, it was reactive. And I think this had to happen in order for the jump start, like you said, of all the factions and the anti-establishment and gimmicks and Mr. McMahon and the whole, you know. I'm sorry. I don't think Vince put makeup on his eye. I'm sorry. I disagree with people like that. I also disagree that, you know, they didn't know that Bret Hart was going to draw WCW. You know, he didn't. I don't think he told Vince he was going to do that. And I don't think he told Vince he was going to trash the fucking ringside too. It was just like when you quit a job and you want to just go like your last day on the job. You're one of those guys. Oh, I'm going to shit on the boss's desk. You know, I think he took a big giant shit on the boss's desk and be like, all right, peace out, dude. I'm out of here. And the facts, I think the facts went through that weekend. I think he already accepted the deal. Like, I think, and he just wanted to go out on his terms. And I think because of the agreement that Vince had with certain guys, I guarantee you, with Hogan at WrestleMania 9, with the whole thing with Yokozuna,
yeah,
that was an homage. Like, nobody expected Hogan to beat Yokozuna. Like, and he was on his way out.
I think it was bullshit that happened.
But, again, that was them giving Hogan the creative control thing. There was only a... Dude, you can count on your hand the amount of guys that had creative control with their character. Now it's more common with almost everybody. There's more input from the wrestlers. There's a creative control team. Like, there's a bunch of fucking writers in the back. Back then, it was not like that. There were only a couple of guys. Like, I guarantee you, like, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, and Bret Hart were the only three guys that had a fucking... that had a say. The Taker still had a say up until 2 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think John Cena has that right now. You know? I don't think anybody... I don't... You know what I'm saying? Like, I think Roman Reigns is gonna have that eventually.
I hope so.
Well, it is what it is. I mean, you could see it. Like, listen, we don't know. We're just speculating. We're fans that watch that have been watching this a long time, and we're just our opinions. You know, we just, you know, sometimes we get it. So most of the time we predict it, and sometimes we don't. Like, they throw us a bone, and they keep us excited by surprising us. I want to be wrong. I'm one of the guys that I don't want to be right all the time because
you want to be shocked sometimes.
I want to be. That's why I didn't read any fucking spoilers from England last week. I still live vicariously through my young self and my son and my nephew. Like, I still want to be excited about this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want, like, next week, it's the wall game, baby. Like, I want to be excited because I feel like there's still there's more talent now than there was. I was watching a primetime wrestling from 87 today on the network. And it got me thinking, like, I'm watching these, all Gorilla and Bobby played was house show, you know, clips.
Correct.
And I'm watching a match between Paul Orndorff and Pedro Morales from the Maple Leaf Gardens, right? And I'm just like, and I'm watching this, and I'm listening to the Gorilla call the action, Bobby Heenan's interfering, and Pedro Morales is getting his face kicked in, and I'm thinking, like, you know, this was the end of the road for Pedro, and this is around the time that they had Orndorff in limbo after he turned on Hogan, and they were pushing Andre, and they kept asking Bobby, "Where's Orndorff been?" "Oh, he's been around." "Well, where's he been?" "He's been around," and like, you couldn't get away with that now. Guys are forgotten when they're not on TV anymore. Like, when I was a kid, I never had that fucking problem. Like, I didn't care about Corporal Kirshner, but I wanted to know what Paul Orndorff was. I wanted to know why, you know, Adonis was on TV. Or I would constantly play these images in the back of my head and be like, all right, where is so-and-so? Where is so-and-so? Like, now there's so many guys on the roster and girls on the roster, you forget.
You forget, and also you even forget who the fuck the champions are now.
Right.
I never was like that in the 90s and the 80s, man. I knew who the fuck the champions
were. Of course you did, because you...
I was emotionally invested in these guys.
But, I mean, in a sense, you still are. Because if you weren't, you wouldn't be sitting here with me on a Friday night.
Yes.
Right? So, let's get that straight also. Let's also establish the fact that there are more people involved in sports entertainment. Like, instead of having 30 guys to a roster, now you have 50.
You have three brands.
And you have three brands, exactly. Four if you count the fucking cruiserweights.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
what did Nick the Dick say? He said, oh man, fuck the Roman Reigns. And then he said, Chabi, I made my profile pic just for you. Change it to The Undertaker. The Underfaker.
What's going on in the chat room? I can't see it.
I think Tony said, Brett should have pulled a Louis C.K. in the middle of the ring.
Oh, Jesus.
Fucking A. and then it's the whole... People are mad at me for liking Roman Reigns, man. I like Roman, dude.
Who cares what people think?
Yeah. And then Nick the German hates the fact that I hate Undertaker.
Yeah, no, you don't like Undertaker. Don't tell my sister that, though. Don't tell Natalie that.
Hey,
shit.
Natalie, I hate the Undertaker.
Don't tell Natalie that. Natalie will fuck you up. Natalie will give you a
tombstone. He's the absolute drizzling shits.
I
respect his legacy, but I've taken diarrhea dumps better than The Undertaker's career.
Your opinion, man.
That's exactly.
You have a right to your opinion.
And Nick the Dick, Roman Reigns can wrestle rings around Bret Hart.
All I know is that this was a definitive moment that needed to be covered again. I mean, I know Dave and I did it a couple of years ago, and the Wizards did it on their year anniversary show with us. They're gonna have their anniversary coming up in a couple of weeks. This is year six for them.
For them, it's six. Yeah. Yeah.
For me, yeah, they're a year ahead of me. But I was there for the first year, and we talked about the screw job.
Yeah.
You know, and
can you believe it's 20 years though?
No, because
oh my god,
you know, when you hit a certain age. To my younger people that listen to the show, when you hit a certain age, things go extremely fast. Like, life changes rapidly.
I was 13, for Christ's sake.
Like, you watch, like, my kid is 10 years old. He's almost 5.5 feet tall. I've been with my son since he's 2.5. Like, you just go back and you're like, you know, watching, like, Tony's son. And I've known Tony for 5 years now, watching his son, or watching... Like, even your kid was born, like, 3 months ago.
Correct.
And he's fucking massive already. Like, you blink and shit happens. And I feel like there's not enough time in a day to invest in all the stuff that you did when you were a kid, obviously, because now you have to be an adult.
can't watch wrestling as much as we want to. We can't play video games like we want to.
Right, right, right.
As soon as we get home, we just want to hang out with the family and then just pass the fuck out. Just
go to sleep.
That's it.
Yeah, I'm all about stuff that I'm not getting is a lot of sleep.
At least now, you still have to make time on the weekends for your extracurricular activities.
Like this and Strat and my family, you know, but I feel like, you know, when I do the podcast and I can do stuff like this, like talk about stuff like this, this was a hot button topic. As Uncle Eddie would say, it's a hot button topic.
Correct.
People are still talking about this.
20 years later, I can't believe it.
Like, it sparked something. And when you look at the Facebook post and Twitter post, I'm still getting hits. Like, it resonates with them.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we got to do that. So yeah. That's pretty cool.
Very good show, by the way.
Yeah, good show tonight.
Chillin, you're 2 years older than me? You were 15 when this happened. I didn't know that. Okay.
You know them Latins don't age.
Who?
Latin people don't age.
Well, she looks like she's 21.
Yeah, Shaylin's going to be 21 for the next 35 years.
Jesus Christ.
That's how Latin women are. They fucking, they're like fine wine, dude. They just age like almost perfection. And then they hit that one age and it just fucking dropped.
Except for what? And then
Well, when they're old, I'm gonna talk about now.
And then us white guys, we just look like shit.
Absolutely.
Good God.
Fat, bald, and full of piss and vinegar.
Except for fucking Nick German, because he doesn't bald, apparently. He just gets gray.
No, according to your wife, Nick's a handsome bastard, so.
Yeah, my wife is in love with Nick.
Nice.
Why are you sad, Tony? Don't be sad.
Tony shouldn't be sad. Tony,
dude, you look like you're 31 and you're 40 something, bro. You got great genes for a white dude.
Tony's my age. He's a handsome bastard.
God damn it, dude.
He has all his hair. You know.
He does.
Yeah, he lost a bunch.
I lost mine at 19 and I'm 33. Go figure.
No, I lost mine in 08. Like, I lost a bunch of it, like in 08, 09.
At least you were in your 30s.
Yeah.
I was 19. I lost my hair at 19 years old, dude. I had to shave it off.
No, listen, it is what it is. It is what it is.
Yep.
You want to wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up, dude.
All right. So I want to thank Mega Powers for coming on tonight.
Mr. Mega Powers, my brother from another mother.
Going to Japan. He's Mandingo.
He's going to the Jap land. I can't. I'm happy.
He's going to the Jap land. Woo. Yeah, I want to thank everybody on social media for their input on this show tonight, man. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, thanks a lot, assholes. I love you guys.
So, anyway.
Really?
Yeah.
Do we have to do this for Nick German? Really?
No, we're doing it for the show.
Oh, okay. I thought it was for German.
No, fuck Nick.
Thank you.
No.
We'll keep you around.
We'll keep you around. Anyway. Again, thank you everybody for hanging out with us tonight. Much appreciated. Thank you everybody from social media for checking in.
Thank you, Rob. Yeah. Thank you, Mega Powers. Thank you, Shining Wizards Tony. Thank you, Nick the Dick. Everyone.
Yes, Sadell was in the room tonight.
Maverick, thank you.
Maverick Shaylin. Was listening. Shaylin. Big Uptown Georgie was listening on TuneIn.
Tony was asking if Dave was on to congratulate the jury. No, not yet. He was asking if Dave Mega Powers was on to congratulate the Midnight Jury.
To congratulate the jury? No. No, no. He came on to talk about himself and social media.
Well, you know.
And New Japan.
Very egotistical, but it's okay.
Right.
We'll keep him around.
Anyway, next week, we're live on Saturday. We're not on Friday. You may get a filatorial, though.
What are we doing next Saturday?
It's the War Games! If you will. All right, don't forget, be a mark, buy the shirt, prowrestlingtees.com/TomicalThrowbacks.
Oh, they fit comfortably, them shirts. I'll
Twitter, at TBuckleTBacks.
And Choppy2984.
Instagram, at TomicalThrowbacks. Gmail, at TomicalThrowbacks1@gmail.com. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. RantEMRadio.com. Join all of our friends who are not network affiliates. Support them as well.
Support 1-800-MACHO-MAN.
We got to bring that back, by the way. People are asking for the phone sex skits again. So, anyway, thanks again for everybody.
Thank you, guys.
On behalf of my tag team partner, I'm the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, bidding you adieu. Take care of yourselves, each other. Avoid the clap. Don't get arrested. Say the N-word, the R-word, the A-word, and all the other fucking
There's a lot of words out there, aren't they?
Yeah. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.